Now, a lot of things that happened on July 4th, 1776. The only really big thing in that at that date was the proclamation and putting out of the Declaration of Independence. The Revolutionary War actually started over a year before that. It started in the spring when the guns went off and the battles took place and British soldiers were shot down, and people of Concord and Lexington, close to Boston area, fought the British. Now, it took about a month to get to England, that some of their soldiers had been shot, and that the rebels, they called them the rebels in the United States, were fighting and going to fight for their rights and their independence, and they did not want England to just dominate everything, and they did not want to be submissive to everything the king said and all the opposition and all the pressures. The war took place, started in 1775. It did not end, the war, until 1783. It was 8 years before British Britain finally said, okay, that's it, we're pulling out completely, you can have it. Now, what most people don't know, that on both sides of the Atlantic Ocean, there was controversy over that war. In England, there was a huge amount of fighting and controversy in Parliament, whether to fight over here, whether to send more troops. You know, Parliament has to apportion the money for the troops and authorize the war. The king did not have complete control ever since the Magna Carta. You know, the king of England lost a lot of his power. But a lot of people still, you know, the king wants to enforce it, and a lot of people were for it. So it's tremendous controversy. Actual fights broke out in Parliament, people calling each other names. And there were people opposed to the war. Here's one person, his name was John Wilkes, not John Wilkes Booth, just John Wilkes. He was the Lord Mayor of London, and he was against the war. And here's what he said. He spoke to Parliament. He said, "I speak, sir, as a firm friend to England and America, and still more to universal liberty and the rights of all mankind. I trust no part of the subjects of this vast empire will ever submit to be slaves. Never had England been engaged in a contest of such import to her own best interests and possessions. We are fighting for the subjection, the unconditional submission of a country more extensive than our own, of which every day it increases in wealth, natural strength, and population. Should we not succeed, we shall be considered as their most implacable enemies. An eternal separation will follow, and the grandeur of the British Empire will pass away." He sees where this is going. If we lose, then the people of America, as they call them, America, will forever separate from us. On the other hand, on the other side, of course, there was people who wanted the war. A guy by the name of John Dyke, Auckland, his name was, from Devonshire. He agreed with the king that it was the job of reducing America to a just obedience. A headstrong young officer he was, and he felt himself, he said, "We need to recollect our strength, our resources, and above all the spirit of the British nation, which when aroused knows no opposition." He went before Parliament. He spoke like this: "Let me remind you of those extensive and successful wars that this country has carried on before the continent of America was even known. Let me turn your attention to that period when you defended this very people from the attacks of the most powerful and valiant nation in Europe." He means France. You know, under Napoleon, England beat France. When your armies gave law and your fleets rode triumphant on every coast. Shall we be told then that this people, the Americans, whose greatness is the work of our hands and whose insolence arises from our divisions, who have mistaken our leniency, the leniency of this country, for its weakness, and the reluctance to punish for a want of power to vindicate the violated rights of the British subjects. Shall we be told that such a people can resist the power efforts of this nation? So he gets up. I'm for the war. Let's go in. Let's punish them. And some people, like a guy by the name of George Johnstone, who had been the governor of West Florida, praised the people of New England for their courage and fortitude to fight. He explained that there was a wide difference between the English soldier. So he's telling these people, hey, look, there's a wide difference between an English soldier paid to get over there and to fight and the people who are there fighting for their freedom and their prosperity, their homes, their home life. So in England, there was a lot of division about the war. Should they fight here? Should they send more troops? Should they subject the Americans? But in America, we also had major divisions. You had what were called the rebels. These are the people who want the war and want to fight for their freedom. But you had in America right here, generation after generation, people have come from 1600s, remember, generation after generation of people who were British, who loved the British Empire, who loved the king, and who were loyal. They said, what are we doing? We just should submit to the king's wishes, we should submit to the king's ideals, and we ought not to do anything other than that. So you had two factions, the loyalists and the rebels. George Washington was unanimously at that time, as we had ragtag army, and everyone who sat there in the Continental Congress, whatever there was of it, said, who should we appoint to lead the forces that we have? Without one objection, everybody unanimously chose George Washington. Now, George Washington had never had any military experience, never fought in a war. He was not he had not had any command or training in military tactics, but everybody saw that he was so robust. The way he could ride his horse, the way he sat on that horse, the strength and physical power of his body. Some people, you know, they talked about he could throw a coin across the Potomac River. I don't know about that. But they did say that he could throw from down here to the height of Mount Washington, he could throw a stone all the way up there. He was so valiant, so strong. And he was smart. And he was rich. He was from Virginia. He never had never been to Boston. You know, it wasn't like you could, you know, like today, you can travel everywhere, you get on a train, you get on a bus, you know. And news, by the way, took a whole month before the people in England realized that they were fighting at Lexington and Concord. The guns of the loyalists, you know, they were trying to be loyal, but the loyalists were turning in the rebels. They would go to a redcoat and say, you know, so-and-so down the street, they think we should overthrow. They think we should go for liberty. And so then the redcoats would go down and bang on the door, capture these people, take your gun, you know, and you know, take your wife, you know, destroy your house, wreck your furniture. And so all these things were taking place. Loyalists who wanted to be loyal to the king did not want to fight. Now, George Washington finally comes to Boston. General Howe from England has been appointed by the king and by the parliament to manage this war and to bring the troops and to be the general of the war for England. He comes. He looks out. He's coming through the harbor. They all land, you know, basically at Boston. George Washington comes to Boston. He looks over the harbor. He sees this high ground called Devonshire Heights, or Dorchester Heights, I think it's. And he looks down and he said, we need to fortify this area. It's uphill, and we're looking down on the harbor. So he and his men capture that, and they work day and night miraculously. And by the way, the weather played a big factor during the Revolutionary War. the winter of 1776, that is from January through March, the winter of 1776 was the coldest winter they had ever experienced on record at that time. The summer of 1776 was absolutely stifling hot. It was so hot that people on the British ships said the air didn't move, you could hardly catch a breath. So sometimes when the British ships were coming in, the wind was pushing them back. They were slow getting up to the shore because of the weather. George Washington manned that height. When the rebels took over that height under George Washington and fortified that hill, the loyalists, realizing, hey, there's going to be shooting, these cannons can reach our homes. Many of these loyalists lived in Boston and around Boston, left their houses, decided they would get on a ship, let's get on one of the British ships and get out of here and get away from these guns if we can. And so many of them left. Many of these loyalists were very prominent in the government and in the province, and in professional and commercial life of New England. Churchmen like Henry Canner, jurists like Peter Oliver, physicians, educators, successful merchants. The elderly Nathaniel Perkins was a loyalist, Boston's foremost physician. Others were also like John Lovell, headmaster of the Boston Latin School, attorney James Putnam of Worcester, who had been John Adams' mentor in law. How did John Adams become an attorney? He took it from this guy, and now this guy is a loyalist saying, I don't want to fight. I'm going on the side of the British. Thomas Hutchison. The General Timothy Ruggles, veteran from the French Indian War, other people, many Harvard graduates, fourth and fifth generation Americans were loyalists. Ultimately, in Boston, 1,100 people of the loyalists went out and forsook their houses, left the houses, left their stuff, left their homes, all that they have gathered, and decided they better, because the cannons are going to reach them. They got on board ships, 1,100 of them packed into ships. One person wrote, men, women, children, parents, masters, mistresses, we were obliged to pig together, lie on the floor like pigs, one on the other, and there being no berths until they left the harbor. They left. When the ship left, it went just a little ways down, and they realized they were still in range of the cannons of the rebels. And the rebels were the Americans who were fighting for liberty. George Washington would be considered a rebel. And during these times of these years, at one point, General Howe, realizing that the rebels were really getting somewhat of the best of the British, and they were investing a lot of money, a lot of men were dying, a lot of their people were dying, sent George Washington a truce flag coming up, and they addressed the letter to George Washington, Esquire, etc., 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 because they didn't know what to call him. They didn't know what to call him general, they didn't know what etc. And George Washington sat there when they came, and the proposal from the men representing General Howe was, if you want to, let's call it quits right now. The king is willing to pardon everybody, will pardon all of you now. You just go back. These British subjects will just pardon you for your rebel. Just surrender now. And George Washington looked across the desk, and he said, those who have committed no offense need no pardon. And that's it. He turned them down. And the war continued till 1783. We finally won. America won. But America had no government. It now had to form a government. So from 1783 until the Constitution of the United States in 1787, the task was to build America a constitution. You can read that constitution anytime, online, or many of you have copies of it, or in encyclopedias. It's well worth it.